Telecast.
Hi, I'm Justin Crosby, and welcome to another Telecast. On this week's show, we're looking back a couple of weeks to the hugely enjoyable Mia Market in Rome, where I hosted the Telecast panel on digital-first content creation and distribution. My guests on the panel were Bea Hegedus, Executive Managing Director, Global Distribution at Vice Media Group, Holly Graham, Chief Business Officer at Little Dot Studios, Dennis Cortium, Founder of Germany's Calivision Network, and Olivier Levar, Director of Nuon Digital, which is part of Nuon Studios and subsidiary of French broadcaster TF1. It was a great discussion with today's leaders in digital, so I hope you enjoy it. But before that, I met with Marco Spagnoli, Deputy Director of MIA and Head of Doc and Factual, to tell us a little bit more about the market. It's coming right up on this week's Telecast. I'm here in Rome. The sun is beating down. It's about 80 degrees. It's nearly the second week of October. And I'm delighted to be here at MIA for my first time, which is the International Audio Visual Market in Rome. And I'm delighted to be here with Marco Spagnoli, who's the factual director of the market, but involved in much more ways than purely just on the factual side. Marco, how are you?
Fine, thanks. It's really summer here, so we enjoy this strange Roman summer.
It is a strange Roman summer. It's amazing to be here and outside and enjoying the sunshine this time of year. My first trip to MIA. Tell us about MIA and its background, first of all, for anybody who's not aware of it. Lots of people will be aware of it in the calendar and seeing it in the international industry calendar, but give us a sense of the history of the event and what it's here to achieve.
MIA Market took the heritage of a small market that was part of the Rome Film Festival. It was called Business Street. So 9 years ago, they decided to expand this concept to make a market more for series and films. Then came documentaries, and then that's when I arrived. And in the last 2 years, we tried to develop more the factual thing that has many challenges because of the rights. It's sometimes, why do we make rights, a market for rights that we cannot sell or buy? But things are changing also in this landscape. And the last edition was the animation side. So people who will come to Rome, especially companies that produce different type of things, of formats or documentaries, film, dramas, can be in Rome and can work for 5 days in all their sectors.
Who's here? Where are they from? And what are they looking to achieve?
Where they're from like 56 countries. Of course, there is a majority of Italians because of this is also a very strong event for the Italian market itself. We have all the people from the Film Commission, producer, broadcaster, all together here. But the people who come here are looking for financing their co-production projects. We have four different pitching forums. We hope also to have a pitching forum for Factual when it will be possible or we'll find a formula that makes everybody here happy to be here. And there are also a lot of financiers, there is a lot of funds, there are lots of people who come here to understand more how to invest in cinema. And also, because Italy is one of the most important and most well-functioning tax credit. So there are projects that have no relation whatsoever to the account. Imagine that today they will be presented here the series from Un Prophète by Jacques Audiard, and it's shot in Puglia. And so it's a total new market, and so this is why we want to have new friends like you to understand more and to help us also to achieve some goals. What is very important that every year we try to refocus on the market. So it's really the market itself to tell us what to do. MIA Market is produced by the Italian Association of Producers is a governmental institution. It's funded by the Italian Trade Agency. It means that we have a budget. We don't need to call to ask for people to come here in order to have their money. We don't. Myanmar must be, and it is luckily in black. It's not on the red, so, but still. It's very important because sometimes I feel that then when I talk to people that they it's like me asking for the money for the accreditation. I don't care. I mean, of course, like I pay in other markets, they have to pay. But for us, it's more important to be part of this project, to understand the possibilities that Italy, on many levels, offers to producers, to broadcasters, and also to creative people who want to tell their story, maybe set here instead than elsewhere.
We know that Italy's got an incredibly rich history in film and cinema, but when we're talking about TV specifically, perhaps Italy hasn't been as outwardly facing internationally as some of the other European markets. Is that starting to change with the streamers that have come in and invested in various different territories around Europe? Is that starting to change? Are you starting to see more and more international projects really sort of spreading around the world? Or is that, has it still got a way to go in that area?
I think that in this business, there is always a way to go. Nobody arrive anywhere. Italy has always been a land of cinema. We are facing Via Veneto, that was the backstage for La Dolce Vita, but not only for Fellini's films also. If you think Vincente Minnelli, 2 weeks in Another Town, or Tennessee Williams, the Roman Spring of Mrs. Stone, they were all set there. And that was the 50s, the 60s. And now, afterwards, now we have the drama. My Brilliant Friend is a co-production between Rai and HBO, and there are many other projects that are coming. We know that we are maybe advanced in one in part, and we'll be a little bit late or not as well developed as in other situation. But for example, documentaries are traveling very well all over the world, although we don't have, let's say, the big name, the big success that you would point. But documentary is difficult, and now we are talking about factual. Yesterday we had a very interesting discussion with Jim Stanley by Benny J, and he explained why Italy is so relevant for Benny J and what is changing. And then things are changing. There are a few hints that you feel that are interesting. For example, Italy's Got Talent, that is the version, now was acquired by Disney. In Italy, it's on Disney Plus. And they say, of course, without numbers that we don't know, that is far more successful than they expected. So what you see is that things are changing. It's interesting for us to understand what are the direction for this type of change, for this type of, and you know, it's very important to know also that there are a lot of things that you need to do in order to achieve some goal. In terms especially of co-production and spend, especially in terms of funding. But this is why also people come here and understand that maybe there is a way to do something here that we didn't think of. It always happens this way, because the history of cinema in Italy has always been very well connected to few entrepreneurs, producers, that came here and had an idea. Why don't we do something like that? And imagine, the first American production in Italy was in 1912. So it's 111 years after the first production. So it's a long history. There might be some changes. There might be some challenges. There are some challenges. But I think that in the end, it's always the quality of the products that you can achieve here. Otherwise, you wouldn't understand why there are so many American film or British film or German film or French film shot here, with or without tax credit. So that's the main thing. Cinecittà is full. Now they think to do another and open to other studios. So we'll see. I mean, nothing is written in stone. So we are looking for right new chapters for this ongoing story.
Yeah. I was speaking to Lucy Smith, boss of MIPCOM, recently, and she was saying that, you know, clearly for a market that focuses on co-production, the changes that are happening within the streaming market and the SVOD market at the moment is perhaps leading the industry more down the co-production route. And obviously that's something that, you know, you're looking to bring in more co-production partners from all around the world. So why should they come here? Why should they make MIA a really key market on their list if it isn't already?
MIA market is an expression of Italy. It's an expression of a system. We are like the tip of the iceberg, or the welcoming door in a very big store, or in Italian would say in an ancient palazzo. Why to work with Italy is a question that should be, or in Italy it's a question that should be addressed to so many producers and co-producers that came here and they do their thing. Imagine just the Bond films. I think Italy is one of the countries where the Bond films have more and more stories. It's not just a background, a set. Now you can produce with Italian talent. You can produce with Italian shows. For example, Dancing with Stars. In Italy, it's like a weekend big show, you know, that you do. And the judges decide that the Italian version should be addressed as a new change of the format because it was so different from the original. So it added up something. So there are many possibilities in terms of creative, of course, but also financing possibilities, because every region has its own story, its funds, and also they are very interested in supporting and helping new people coming here. So I think that there are a lot of possibilities, and MIA is interesting because in 5 days you can meet everyone. It's not that you have to go to Milan, to Torino, or to Puglia, or to Sicily. They are all here, get here, and they are all here in order to understand the necessities of production. So you don't need to talk to the politician who has a fund. You are talking to people from Siena. They can help you. They can pinpoint in the right direction. And this is quite interesting because especially nowadays, it's important to have a market that's about ideas more than finished products. MIA couldn't, I mean, we have a lot of screenings, we have also areas where you can buy the finished products, but this is more a market of ideas. And also a market where you're helped in order to achieve your idea in the best way possible. To give you an idea, you can find here executive producers such as Enzo Sisti, who is the guy who told Mel Gibson, why don't you shoot in Matera? And Matera nobody has shot like in 30 years a film there. And then now if you want to shoot a film, you have to book like, because it's every 6 months, a Bond film or whatever. So it's more about ideas than finished products. So for a producer, for a creative person, or even for an executive, they can meet people and understand what could be the right way to approach the market.
It's clearly a market where there's lots of conversations going on and lots of people meeting. That's the great thing. We met actually at 5 a.m. in the morning in the back of a taxi, Mark, didn't we? Now, I'd have to say it wasn't at the end of a long night. It was actually the beginning of a long day when we were leaving very early from Sunnyside of the Dock to fly various places. Finally, just to wrap up, tell us a bit about your background. You know, how did you come to be factual director at MIA? What was your background in film and factual before then?
I'm a journalist. I started 50, I'm 53, and I started 30 years ago covering the entertainment industry. And at one point of my career, I was asked to work in festivals such as Taormina and a TV and drama festival called Roma Fiction Fest. And at the same time, I started doing documentaries because I was asked, and these things found a little bit of success. So at one point, they need to reimagine the doc section, and they asked me if I want to bring my expertise also on the productive side. I started with my colleague Gaia Trident, who's now the director of MIA, with another person, that's Lucia Milazzotto, that now is working in Cinecittà. And at one point, she became the director of MIA, and I became the deputy director of MIA, and I oversaw the doc and factual section. I think it was the right choice, because Gaia has a stronger wrist than I have. And, you know, sometimes women, vast majority of cases, women are better than men in organizing things and making everything right at the same time. So, I'm a friend, of course, in 20 years, but I supported the choice. So this is why I started doing this doc and factual thing, and every year we face new challenges. But for me, the important thing is also, you know, I have this journalistic approach. When I meet somebody, like we did on, I knew about your work, we never met before. So I say, why? It came down on me, why don't we do something together? Because that's really the Italian thing. Because you see the opportunity. MIA has not any truth about the market. We don't know what. But we can work with other people from all over the world, like you, and become friends in order to make it better. Because there are a lot of things we don't know, we don't see. It works also the other way, because sometimes I am surprised we're talking about the Italian production by people who apparently have talked to God the night before, so they know everything that I don't know, and then they tell you, oh, what, we work with one of the most important directors in Italy, and they say, what's his name? And you heard the name and say, well, look, he's not an... But in terms of competition, but it's not like the biggest shining star, because of course this is a commercial evaluation. I'm not talking about the talent will be there, but at least. And so sometimes my work is also to debunk the prejudice about Italy. Actually, we answer the emails. We try to speak and to write in the best English possible. Maybe Oxford won't give us an honorary degree quite soon, but we'll survive also this pain. And so in the end, you know, we try to do our best. We're a group of people that are working together for many years, so we know, and also we know what the challenges are. But also what is important is also the changes of the market. Sometimes they ask, why you do something else? Because it's time. We couldn't do it before. Why there is this afternoon the first international factual forum for because in the last year we couldn't find so many for factual that the people producer and their own rights. We found them. We found that at least 24. So we made a selection. So this afternoon you will see. But of course this is the first step. We do. What is very important that we don't think to have the monopoly of truth, and also we know that if you work in this industry, you must listen to telecast to be updated. But also you must do. You have to study. No, there is no chance you getting somewhere without studying, and also without making mistakes. But you know. The first thing they told me when I was like in my 20s in Rome, and they tell you two things that are when you work in cinema. First thing is only people who don't work don't make mistakes. And the second thing, if it was easy, everybody could have done it. And so MIA moves in between these two things, two pearls of wisdom we had.
And thank you for inviting me to put a panel together. We're doing a panel this week, and we have execs from Little Dot Studios, from Vice, we have Calivision. You know, we have some fantastic execs lined up to talk about digital first and the future of digital production and distribution. So that's going to be really exciting to speak to all the execs on that panel. Marco, thank you for your time. I know this is your busiest few days of the year, so thank you for being so generous. Good luck with MIA.
Thank you very much.
Now, I'm delighted to be hosting this panel, and we're really lucky today to have some real innovators on the stage to talk about the next generation content companies and their business models. What these guys don't know about monetizing digital content isn't worth knowing. So get your questions ready, if you have any. We'll hopefully get to a few of those at the end of the session. And the aim of this really is to share some insights, provide some inspiration and pointers to the future against a backdrop of a very difficult period in the TV industry and the content industry overall, and perhaps highlight some areas for collaboration between the digital video sector and the more traditional TV industry going forward. So let's introduce a panel. First up, Bea Hegedus. Bea is Executive Managing Director, Global Distribution at Vice Media Group, and has oversight of premium content licensing, fast channel, and social media video distribution strategy and co-productions for the group. An International Emmy Award-winning producer, Bea was previously VP of Global Scripted Content at ITV Studios, and her other previous roles include EVP and Head of Television for Swiss financier Silver Re, and President of International at Liongate's Unscripted Distribution Arm. Next, we have Holly Graham, Chief Business Officer at Little Dot Studios, an award-winning digital content studio and media network specializing in bringing premium content to digital audiences. Holly's worked at Little Dot from startup through to scale-up, joining in 2013 as the fourth employee and being a key part of its growth to over 500 staff now. In 2018, she set up and led Little Dot's US operations in Los Angeles, building the business and team before returning to London to lead the agency business, which covers partnerships across entertainment, sport, and consumer brands. Next up, we have Dennis Courtium at the end there. Dennis was previously a brand consultant for brands like Reebok and a music industry manager for artists including Tokyo Hotel, who've sold over 5 million albums with 4 number one singles and 3 number one albums in Germany. Dennis produces one of the German media industry's biggest YouTube successes of the last few years, Seven Versus Wild, and we're going to take a look at that in a few minutes. And finally, we've got Olivier Levard, director of Newen Digital. Newen Digital is part of Newen Studios, which is a subsidiary of TF1. And Newen Studios is dedicated to digital production and distribution and focused on supporting digital extensions and original content made by Newen production companies, distributing IP from Newen Connect's catalogues and digital-first initiatives on digital platforms. So, B, let's start with you. Vice is really the OG in the digital space, which pushed the boundaries and many would say laid the foundations for what's possible in digital video now. Describe the business today for us.
Yeah, thank you, Justin. Thanks for having me here. Yeah, Vice is the original MCN. So obviously we are one of the most well-known digital native companies. We have five divisions. So we are structured in five different areas. We have our ad agency called Virtue. We have Vice Studios, our premium content production company, together with Pulse, making big hits like Gangs of London and the Fyre Festival documentary that everyone knows. And then we have Vice Digital. That's basically our DNA, where we grew out of initially. And then we also have an award-winning Vice News business. They just won 9 Emmys 3 weeks ago. They win a lot of Emmys every year, news Emmys. And then Vice Distribution, obviously, where we are kind of making sure that these divisions collaborate, share information. We cross all kinds of content from one division into another and monetize content on all these platforms. And I started the FAS business. That's our future. And we are looking into kind of growing that from now on.
We'll get into talking a little bit about FAS later on. Before we move on to Holly, B, tell us about the revenue streams roughly across the business. You described how the business is set up. Give us an idea of where the money's coming from across the business.
Well, we are monetizing all of the content on more than one platform or area. Our CEO used to say, make content once and sell it 5 times, which is what I'm trying to do with the team every day and trying to sell it actually 10 times. Obviously, a lot of the content starts on digital. We have development teams in digital, in TV. Forgot Vice TV actually earlier. So we have a cable channel, which is a JV with A&E in the US. So we have a development team sitting within Vice TV. We have a development team within studios, scripted and unscripted development teams. So content starts from any of these development teams. Then we decide where it should live, so where the audience is. And then obviously we are monetizing on social media a lot of this content to begin with when they are originals. They might cross over to the other areas. But if we are making a piece of content for Vice TV, for example, I put it back on social media, I cut it down and put it back on social media to monetize it again and put it on my fast channels. So what we are trying to do is like put one piece of content around the group and also sell it outside of the group.
I've heard this digital approach is called the octopus strategy. So the idea is in the center and the monetization is all the different legs. Okay, brilliant. Well, we'll come back to that in a bit more detail in a second. Holly, welcome Hi. To Rome.
Thank you very much.
So Little Dot is now a major player in this space, as I said, 500 staff and offices around the world. It's part of All3 Media Group. Describe the growth of the business and how the business is organized now as well.
Yeah, so Vice is divided into five. We're only divided into two. There's more octopuses within the two, but basically at the very top, we split in half. So we're a digital content agency where we're working with partners to grow their digital audiences, grow their audiences on social. So that, I guess, looks like working with TV companies, entertainment companies, sports organizations with big business in sports and consumer brands to maximize the impact of their existing content on social platforms or to create original content, primarily in the cases of brands, because there isn't any legacy content. And so there, I guess, I mean, it's exactly right, kind of take the content and figure out how you can maximize the impact of it. Our job kind of sits across all social media platforms, repurposing content. We do paid social, so driving audiences through paid strategies. We also do social media strategy and then hands-on keyboard channel management. So we look after the channels themselves on social platforms. We have kind of really varied spectrum of partners from single IP TV shows like The Graham Norton Show in the UK through to TV networks, like broad spectrum of shows, and then sports organizations and kind of different challenges in each sector. And then the other half of our business is a network of owned and operated digital channels. So 50 social channels and then 8 fast channels. There where we own and operate the IP of the channel, but we license content in, acquire content, and then distribute that content on those channels. Again, it's about sweating the content. So I'm sure we'll say the same thing. You kind of have to maximize the impact of that content on these platforms. And so, yeah, we spend a lot of time not just acquiring content, but then cutting it down, repurposing it, optimizing it for those platforms and getting it out to audiences.
Okay, so you're responsible for the Graham Norton clips that are coming through just about every social feed that I look at.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. Watch them, please.
Amazing. Oh,
watch
I do.
The ads.
I do.
I think that's the kind of amazing power of social platforms, is that they have the power to be, they are global and they have the power to take whatever that IP is from someone like Graham Norton, and I'm very glad you found him because he's a wonderful man, through to any kind of IP to global audiences without the kind of barriers that have historically existed. And we were actually talking about this before, we can't predict who's going to watch what we put out when it comes to territory. So we are obviously programming usually with a certain demographic in mind when we put it onto YouTube, but you know, we might be putting it out for one territory and then actually we find that the audience is huge in another. So yeah, I think that's what's the huge kind of power of social, is that you are reaching a global audience the minute you upload it.
I'm interested to know how, for those who maybe aren't invested into digital completely, you know, how does Little Dot Studios differ from Vice, would you say? What's the difference?
I mean, I guess the major differentiator is that we don't make the content in most of the cases. So we are either coming to traditional TV companies and helping them navigate the world of digital and optimize their content for digital, or sports organizations, or kind of like legacy organizations, I guess, non-digital native organizations, helping them kind of move on into this next chapter of distribution. And then in the case of our channel brands, we are primarily licensing content and putting it out. So I guess that's kind of probably our major differentiator. You know, I think there are challenges to that. Well, there are inherent challenges to that. And like, there's a kind of, what we talk about a lot is is IP and how do we kind of navigate the fact that we don't hold a huge amount of IP. But there's also, of course, in the digital world, advantages as well. So I think probably that's our major differentiator. When you talk about your business in terms of monetization and having to kind of optimize for every platform, having to, you know, look to the future, look to the next chapter of FAST and how consumers are engaging with content, like all of those challenges are echoed in our business. So I'm sure there are a lot of similarities. But I think that's probably the major difference.
Yeah, okay. I mean, the difference between we make everything ourselves, so we don't license anything. Everything you see on Vice is Vice.
And Holly, just finally before we move on to Olivia, so digital first, so commissioning yourself to create original content for social media channels and brand sponsorship, is so that's not a major part of what you do. It's more about exploiting existing IP and content for other partners and clients.
Yeah, I mean, we have done it. So we actually won a BAFTA a few years ago for the first film shot entirely on an iPhone, which was a Real Stories original. So we created, developed our IP in partnership with a smaller production company, and then that went out on Real Stories. We have created original content. We're in the showreel, they were talking about the search for Endurance, which is a history hit project, and that is resulting in a significant documentary that we're producing, developing in-house. But it isn't the major part of what we do. The major part of what we do is repurposing existing content and helping legacy organizations, but organizations who own content and want to do more with it in lots of different forms, find audiences on social. Yeah,
Olivier, coming to you next. Welcome. So Newen Digital is part of Newen Studios, which was a relatively recent acquisition by TF1. Tell us about what you do at Newen Digital.
Hello, thanks for having me here. It's great to speak after you two, because what we do at Newen is a mix of both. First, the idea was to do ourselves the distribution and the monetization of all the Newen catalog, what we produce for TV historically, on all the social platform. So we built our MCN, multi-channel network, on YouTube, Snapchat, Facebook, TikTok, on FAST, on everything you can imagine. So we can be in control of our own content and speak for this content and make them successful, adapt them on all these platforms. And the other challenge was to produce for this digital world. And it was very difficult for us, because when you are TV, you don't know the economy, you don't know how you do it. So the first step, when you have these channels of distribution, it becomes possible. And that's why more and more we produced in the same team. And even though these activities, they are all several years old in Newen, what's new this year is that we put all the teams together. The idea between Newen Digital is that if you put the talents of distribution, who edit the clips on YouTube, on Snapchat, and who know how to make a good picture, a good title to make it successful, if they work with the people producing the content in the same room, then you can, the sky is the limit. You can invent great things. And that's what really changed in the team this year. The vertical where we are strong on the digital world are historically our TV programs. The health and the true crime, they are our biggest verticals so far. And it's because we have the leading health show every day on national French TV. Our true crime show, Faites Entrer l'Accusé, every French people know it. It's been around for 20 years. So we built on these catalogs. And from that, we created channels on genres where we are not so strong. On Shiny Floor Entertainment, a lot of scripted, because we have stronger, unscripted companies. And now the original, we are trying to invent what we are not good at in TV, just to make the group grow.
So tell us about the relationship with TF1 then for Newen Digital. How does that feed into you? Does it at all at the moment? Or?
Yes, but in a good way. You could think that having a big TV channel is going to be complicated to do digital, but it's the opposite, because we are independent on our daily work from TF1. But TF1 is a huge broadcasting company, so we are very close to the challenges a big broadcasting company faces. It's very interesting, because we can give them ideas on how to find the young public, how to invent an economy that works on digital. So for us, it's a real good challenge. And the good thing for me is that TF1 is also my client. For instance, I think the biggest business for Newen in France is daily soaps. There are four daily soaps in France, and we produce three of them. And so that's scripted and that's done by our TV branch. But what my team does is all the behind the scene footage for these TV shows. They are more and more ambitious. We used to make a 1 minute behind the scene footages for Snapchat or Facebook. And now we produce 20 minutes since this year behind the scene footage. And TF1 puts them on my TF1, their platform, and it's a huge success. So I believe we will make more and more of these. And it looks like a TV business, but it's made by a digital team.
Well, that's really interesting, because when we're talking about the types of content and the genres of content that perform well, I think true crime is probably something that performs well, that everyone can agree is a really strong genre. But behind the scenes, kind of authentic footage is something that is particular to digital first and digital. And we'll come on to talk a little bit about that later on. We'll get to the money, where the money's been made and how you make it, because that's what's the questions everyone's got. Dennis.
Justin.
Hi there. Thank you for joining us. I'm really glad that I thought everybody would think there was just Brits on the panel until we got to Olivia and Dennis, who's joined us from Hamburg. Welcome to Rome, Dennis. Thank you for being with us. Television is a very different type of business. I think that's what's great about this panel, is lots of different types of business doing things in digital in a very different way. And it just goes to show, you know, how there are different routes to content monetization. Television is a true indie, if you like, on this panel. Tell us about your production company.
Television was found with a production partner of mine who was in TV business before. I was in the music industry before, was in talent management and all of that stuff. So he told me about the misery of German TV, and he said everything is boring and they don't get it and all of that stuff. So we tried to do it on our own, developed some TV shows, and the show that I'm here for now is called Seven Versus Wild, which was a YouTube-only show, and now it's getting to the third season and going to air it on Amazon Freebie and then on YouTube later, plus additional YouTube content, behind-the-scenes content, 12 full episodes on our YouTube channel.
You're into the third season, but tell us about the success up to now and the concept.
So I think the success comes from the authenticity of the creators, because we saw one of the guys is called Fritz. Like, he's a survival expert. He was running a YouTube channel and he came up with this idea for the first season. I asked six of my friends, do we want to go to Sweden, film ourselves, just GoPro cameras, and then let's see what we get out of it. And it became a huge success. Second season was in Panama. I think for me, it's the authenticity and the realness. That's why it's sometimes a little difficult to market, because you cannot, for example, you can't do product placement. It's not possible, because then you're taking away the realness of it. For me, it is the realness, and then combined, of course, with those influencers, with YouTubers, with streamers, who you would not expect to be in this scenario out in the wild. Like this season, for example, that's going to start on Freebie at the end of October. They were out there for 14 days on an island in Canada. And they were really alone. So I think that's a success, because people want to watch it. They want to be part of this.
I think what we haven't discussed so far on the panel, but is particularly relevant to Seven Versus Wild, is community.
Yeah.
And the power of community. Yeah. And creating content directly and interacting and managing a community.
To me, it reminds me a lot about the music industry, because like, you really have the community, you have those fans who, when we were starting to film the season, as soon as one picture was leaked, Reddit was full of, okay, this could be there, that could be there. I saw this boat before. They were tracking helicopters, they were tracking boats. It's ridiculous. But yeah, like you said, the community. And that's why we need to keep the community not only happy, but we also have to really listen to them, what they want. For example, we ask them, what merchandise would you like to see? Like, we always interact with them. And Fritz, our host, speaks to them directly. If there's a problem, if there's anything going on, he really talks to the community. And that's, of course, perfect on Twitch streams. That's easy to talk to everybody.
For everybody who didn't watch it, there is a helicopter dropping contestants into the sea, mm-hmm. at the beginning of one of the episodes. How do you afford a helicopter in a digital first production purely on YouTube?
With the bank account that we have? No, I mean, the production costs really vary from where you're going to shoot it. Like second season Panama, you can imagine it's less expensive than now third season Canada. Even when it comes to helicopters, it's not the same price. So we still have helicopters in this season, but we can afford it. Of course, we now have Freebie as a partner in it, but we also, through the big YouTube channels, We have YouTube revenue, and we're also selling ads on our show. So for every episode, our host does a 30-second till 1 minute ad that brands pay for. So they have not only an ad, but also a testimonial speaking about their product. That's how we're going to afford it. We sell it before we produce the show. So we can't sell it all before we produce the show, but some money is coming in before too.
And you arrived on a helicopter, did you, Dennis? That was
of course, it's still on top of the building.
Yeah, fantastic. Okay. B, so back to Vice. Describe the development process internally, coming back to this idea of the octopus strategy, the idea in the middle and the monetization across the different legs of that. How are stories incubated within Vice and make their way into a premium feature doc or a short-form video? How does that work internally?
Well, originally, like we are the original MC, and I said, as I said earlier, so all our development teams in digital are very young. Some people joke about Vice, like the average age is 28 in Vice. Obviously, I am kind of pushing that up a bit. So most probably it's
29, right?
So there are a lot of really talented young people who joined Vice when, you know, it was their first job, and then they started working on projects. And that's what we do at Vice. We are trying to help them realize their ideas and organize it a bit. So the digital teams are very young. We also have separate development teams for the separate divisions, obviously, because the audience is a bit different. So Vice TV is a US cable network, which is older in viewership. So they're much older, but they're the youngest cable in the US. This cable audience generally in the US is very old. So we are the youngest cable audience in the US. And then we have the studios teams who are developing content. And what we do is we start with an idea. We have an internal green light meeting where we talk about whether to green light this idea or not. And at that point, we might move the idea between businesses. Or sometimes, you know, we do the same thing as Holly was talking about, and Olivier as well, digital extensions of something we have, or we have an original content starting on digital. For example, we have one called One Star Reviews with Taji. That was a very successful digital idea, similarly to 7 versus Vice, started on YouTube, and then it went to Vice TV, and we made a TV version of it that I think should be a format. So we've been talking to various companies about taking it as a format as well. But we are always looking at how we can make more of the same thing that works. We have a very successful series called Dark Side. Well, it's like a brand now that we created originally as Dark Side of the Ring. And then we made Dark Side of Football, Dark Side of Comedy, Dark Side of 90s, 2000s. And we are putting that everywhere. So it starts its life on Vice TV, and then it goes to all kinds of other environments. So it goes outside. It's one of our most successful titles that sells to SVODs and AVOD platforms. I put it on the FAST channel. And then I also create little cut downs, and it's everywhere. We have Snapchat channels, and it's one of our highest performing titles on social as well. So we are trying to find where the audience goes, and the Vice audience usually is a bit more digitally savvy, and they have a smart TV usually. So we are going everywhere where they're going and everywhere where they're watching our content.
Okay, follow the audience, basically.
Follow the audience, yes, right. Always.
Holly, we saw about how you're working with the more traditional TV industry, let's say, at Little Dot Studios. And we've seen lots of, you know, big numbers, huge amounts of views, huge amounts of followers and reactions and social media, etc. One of the things about the digital sector is that not everything works, right? Not everything works, but there is more freedom to fail. What's your approach to failure within Little Dot? I mean, obviously you don't want to fail, but it will happen, right? It naturally will happen, and that's the beauty of digital. What's your attitude to failure?
Absolutely. We have a privilege in digital that we do have the scope to fail more than I think traditional TV does, because you can, well, for two reasons, I think, because you can do a little bit more with a little bit less. So you can kind of take more risks as a result. And then also, I'm sure we're all very aware of the fact that you have, well, a community, and that community is not just going to tell you you're great. They're going to tell you you're not great when they think you're not great as well. And so you have a much closer kind of feedback loop and a way of testing than you do in more traditional formats. And we've definitely embraced that. I mean, absolutely. I think you were saying a minute ago, when something works, we double down. And when something doesn't work, we stop doing it. But we're never going to not do something just because we don't think it will work, or there's someone in the building who doesn't think it will work. If someone particularly, it's same as you were saying about Vice, particularly if someone really young and really digital native thinks it's going to work, we're like, let's try it. And usually that's the stuff that works. The stuff that goes on Reddit is usually the stuff that works. Embracing that opportunity to try things. And while we don't create and develop original content in the same way all the time as other companies, we're not just re-uploading content, we're repurposing, we're creating memes, we're trying to go viral, we're trying to re-edit to the moments that you just want to see on TikTok versus the moments that you want to see on YouTube versus the moments that you want to watch on Facebook. And so the ability to test around that is such a privilege. And, you know, it doesn't always feel like it, but the feedback you get is such a privilege. And so taking from it, listening to it, and pivoting strategy on that basis is, I think, probably the funnest and the best thing about digital platforms, really. And that's in the micro. So in our kind of day-to-day working, that's our attitude to failure. But I think it ladders up to the macro too, that we've explored paths around digital that absolutely haven't worked. And then we've had others that, you know, our entire digital broadcast network was really founded in the fact that we do a lot of content claiming. So we work with partners to claim user-generated uploads of their content, illegal uploads of their content on social platforms. And sometimes they want us to take it down, but sometimes they want us to monetize it for them. And so in a lot of cases, we were seeing that where we had claimed content and were monetizing it, people were watching long-form documentaries on YouTube in a way that, in an era when no one thought that's what people were doing on YouTube, everyone thought that people were just watching cat videos or whatever on YouTube. And so we were like, wait a second, there's a business in this, or there's something in this, there's something to test here. And so we set up Real Stories, and then now that is our most successful broadcast network channel, which is just long form documentaries on YouTube and other platforms. So yeah, I think taking that kind of test and learn approach is something to take into the day to day and into the business strategy in this space.
So continuing the theme of linear TV and digital and how they're working together or separately in some cases, Olivia, you've had great success with a brand called Safe Zone in France. Tell us a little bit about that.
I like what you said about risk and failure, because this hit we had this year, Safe Zone, it started with that. We were very sad and very jealous of our people from TV in our company, because they were successful in launching lots of brands. And we were working with their brands, and we love to work on their brands, but we wanted also a creation. And we were failing at doing that. So we thought, okay, we are TV and digital. What do we have that the others don't have? And what we have, it's access to TV talents. But once you say that, you're going to do the same mistake as everyone has done before us. You take a TV talent, you put him or her on YouTube, and it fails because you try to do TV and YouTube. So we had this problem. And so that was a challenge. So we found a TV talent, our favorite that we love. It's Faustine Bollard. She's a star of France 2, national television. We do shiny floor entertainment with her on TV. It's called the Wonder Box. It's on France 3. And we met her and we tried to invent something for her. And what we hate about the TV world is when TV has some despise and looks at YouTube like this, you know, like it's shit. And we wanted to fight this idea. And so we talked to her and we say, let's imagine something where someone that everyone knows from TV respect and is curious of this world. So we took some of the YouTubers that were our favorites, and we imagined a show where she invites them and she tries to find what is their talent, what is their story, what is so special about them. Let's look at these people with respect and admiration, because if they have this success, they are talented. So that's the Safe Zone, a place where you get and you can tell what's on your heart and who you are, and we will listen to you. It's very long for YouTube. It's 50 minutes, and we wanted to make it kind of scarce, so we produced only 5 of them, and we launched it this summer. And we were very scared because the young people from our team told us it's never going to work because it's TV. So maybe we worked even more so that it's not TV and that's really a YouTube original production. And it was a hit. With only 5 episodes, we are almost 5 million views just on YouTube, 20 million views on Instagram and TikTok. And everyone this summer was talking about it in the French digital world. And I have an information for Maya. We are launching season 2 before the end of the year. We are almost in production. So it was amazing because from this, we can build many other originals. We had TV platform calling us like, oh, this show on YouTube, do you think it would fit on a platform? Of course it could. But now we have to talk with them to see if it's possible. If we can imagine a double diffusion, YouTube plus a TV platform, I think that's the future. But I have to convince them that it's the future. And we also had Brandt contacting us like, we like the values of Safe Zone, the way you respect people. And for my company, that's the value we'd like to push. That's what our product are. We also have this kind of talk. So for us, it's like becoming our lucky show because it opens doors that we wanted to open, but much sooner than what was imagined. And that's what's magic with digital. When it works, it can work very quickly.
Yeah, and I bet you walked into the office and, you know, you were pretty happy when those numbers started to tot up a bit.
Yes, and for the young, I mean, in our team, I love the debate in the digital team. Some people said, you know, I don't know. And they said, oh, I'm great, it worked, and now I'm going to help you make it even more successful. Some people even apologized, and we were like, okay, it's okay. I make mistake every day. I launch many shows that are failures. So, but let's imagine things together. That's the spirit.
Often you have no idea what's going to work. Like, it's really hard to, like, so we've had some that we all thought was not going to work and that was a hit, and then others that we all thought was going to be a guaranteed hit and wasn't. So,
on Snapchat, there was a show I was sure it was going to work. It was not a question for me. Well, it was a big failure. So,
yeah. It was interesting in what you said earlier on about, you know, the youngest person in the office is often the one, you know, when it comes to digital first, that's got the big idea. So that's interesting. Dennis, so coming back to you on Seven Versus Wild, what are the next steps then? You talked about the Free V deal. You're also taking the format out to license, aren't you? You're pushing that with Quintus Studios. Tell us about that.
Yes. So we're going to launch the season 3 with Free V and on YouTube in Germany, but the next steps are to do it as international versions. Find the French, maybe it's you, the French Fritz.
We must talk about it. I love it.
You have the shirt is perfect for it.
And I want a cut, by the way, just like for the record.
Of course. Then find the American version and all of that. So because that format works, we know how to produce it. We could even go to Panama or Canada to the same locations, just with other people, like they do it with other shows too. You can send the Germans in for 2 weeks, then you send the UK people in for 2 weeks, and you send the French people in for 2 weeks. So yeah, that would be the next steps, and that we do with Quintus, who connected the two of us to. We are like Gerrit, the managing director and founder. I went to elementary school with that guy, so we go way back.
Right, okay. So there could be an idea of an international production hub. Yes. And so anybody that wants to talk to you about licensing the format, how do they do that?
They ask you, because you get the cut, obviously, now.
Yeah, that was a stupid question, wasn't it? Okay, so have we got any questions? We've got a couple of minutes left. We could talk for hours about brand-funded programming and how important brands are for this space, which we're not going to, unfortunately, get time for. Are there any questions that we have in the room?
I was very interested in the digital copyright thing, because some, like, 10 years ago, I met an American company that was designing the tour of American stars based on pirated downloaded. Because, for example, there was a star, we'll give it the fictitious name, Mariah Carey, that basically had apparently, or what they say to me, allegedly, what they said to me, asked them to tell her where she was most downloaded. In a piracy world. So she said, why, let's have 3 dates in a city more than 1 date in another. And basically is what you did, taking the consumer approach and understand, although it's illegal or whatever, understand it's an answer to a request, with the demand from the law, we would say, in Italy. So it's very smart and brave.
Yeah, and I think one thing we haven't really talked about is data, which I guess is one of the huge advantages to digital platforms. When we claim content, I guess it's another lever of data. We have the content about our own content that we put out, and then we also have content data about the content that we're claiming that users have uploaded and that we have the data on. It is really amazing to have both, because, you know, you have your controlled environment of your own content, but then you have, okay, wow, I wasn't expecting. Sometimes we don't even know how they found the stuff they're uploading. We can't even get it. It's on Betamax or it's on like, we don't even know how they found these documentaries, but they're uploading them. People are watching them, and it's a great source of actually user habits, audience habits that isn't controlled by a TV executive or even a digital executive putting it out. It's much more user generated. So yeah, but I think probably we all have to be kind of nerds about data and spend time in looking at what's working and following trends. And again, I would say that's just a huge advantage to working in this space, that you aren't waiting for overnights, you aren't waiting for et cetera. You're able to get real time data on how much you've succeeded or how much you failed.
Yeah. And there's no SVODs who won't share the numbers with you. It's all about, you know, the numbers yourself. Guys, thank you so much. I'm going to ask one very quick question of everybody. Bold predictions. In 3 years' time, how will the content industry have changed? B, you're first.
I believe in free. I think that's the most important thing. I think everything will be free for the viewers in 3 years' time, or like maybe not 3 years' time, but 5 years' time. Or the environments where you have walls and you have to pay for it. It's going to be much more niche, specific to a certain interest someone has. And I think free is the way to go.
Right. It's a very attractive price point, isn't it, free?
Yeah. We will find out how to monetize all that.
Yeah.
But I think for the audience, a lot more stuff will be free.
Okay. Holly?
Yeah, I think I agree with that. So mine was going to be, or is, the kind of really long form and really, really short form dynamic just getting stronger and stronger. So you were asking us earlier about YouTube, and I was reading some stats about how now 98% of UK adults watch YouTube every month, and the average viewing session watch time on YouTube is 62 minutes of content. And so bearing in mind that some of us probably only watch YouTube for 10 minutes, someone out there is watching it for 3 hours or 5 hours to make up for us. So I think that basically engagement with digital platforms instead of television, basically, and then super short form. So 27% of our viewing on YouTube is now to YouTube Shorts, which a lot of people don't even know exist, but is now sort of something like 2 billion year-to-date views for us. People are probably watching YouTube main on their TV and YouTube Shorts on their phone at the same time. And so I think acknowledging that dynamic of like long form and super short form having to coexist. But I would say that all circles around that content is free and it's there, and people are finding it on these platforms, if not elsewhere. So I think that the TV industry, I guess, pivoting to how that that influence of social is going to be a huge next chapter.
We're finding SVODs finding it more and more difficult to get people to subscribe, aren't they? Olivier, same question.
I really agree with what you said. I also hope and wish, so I predict, that there will be a change in the mindset of people. I hate the idea of cannibalization. I believe in multi-platform. It's not because someone watches something on TikTok or on YouTube that he's not going to watch it on a SVOD program or on a free TV. I think exactly the opposite. So I think we will enter a world where you will see a part of a show on TikTok or on YouTube. You will maybe discover an old season of a scripted or unscripted on YouTube, and you will go to Netflix or MyTF1 or another platform to have fresher episodes. So instead of fighting and make platforms fight, you have to invent how they can combine to bring the more value possible. Because we are very business driven. We have to pay for the best production at the end of the day. But I think you get more financing for your production if you understand that every platform has a right to be, and the mindset must be how you come by instead of how you fight your competitors.
Okay. Dennis?
Yeah, it's very boring, but I agree with all three of you guys. I think free for sure. I think we all have to deal with more advertisement maybe, but there will be also more creative and nice ways to grade those advertisements. So I think for the viewer, it will be fine. He will deal with it. And I also believe that, I mean, we're doing this now with Freevee and YouTube, that you can watch the same stuff on different platforms. I'm really sure. And to your point, our viewers, when we announced the third season, said like, please don't short it. It can't be shorter than an hour. So we want to watch it. So, and it's very boring, but I agree with all of you.
Love you.
Well, that's a consensus. So these guys know what they're talking about, so it must be true. B, Holly, Olivia, Dennis, thank you so much for joining us. Really fantastic to speak with you all on the panel. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
That's all for this week's show. As ever, I hope you enjoyed it. This week's telecast was edited by Ian Chambers and recorded in Rome. And sorry about the slightly croaky voice, that's a back-to-back Mia and MIPCOM 12-day trip for you. Next week, we're previewing the Telecast Digital Content Forum, which takes place on November the 9th at the BFI South Bank in London. By the way, tickets are still available and only from telecast.com/events. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next week. Stay safe.